Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by B2B marketers for B2B marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for B2B marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Do check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'm joined to talk about no-code by technology marketing consultant Emma Wesley. Meanwhile, account director at Agent 3, Kate Bodie, talks alchemy in business marketing. Founder of Adapt2Me, Will Wright, tells us about his career journey. And head of strategy and content at Lesniak Swan, Matthew Hicks, will celebrate some great business marketing. Ready, set, then let's go. No code is booming right now, but what does that mean for business marketers? I'm joined to talk about no code by technology marketing consultant Emma Wesley. Emma, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me on.
It's good to have you. So before we dive into no code, tell us a bit about the work you do.
Sure. So I'm a B2B marketer, mainly in the technology space. And I've been doing this for quite a bit over 15 years now, I hate to admit. But I, just a bit of background, I started my career agency side, then went client side, then repeated that cycle a couple of times, sort of going back and forth between agency and client. And then a couple of years ago, I actually started my own business. In my previous career, I worked with bigger companies, the likes of HP, Barclaycard, Symantec. But then the past few years, since I've started my own business, I've been working with a lot of smaller companies, tech startups and small businesses mainly. And where I've found that I've niched really is in content strategy, which is, you know, I think it's quite natural because a lot of B2B companies, a lot of tech companies are finding their niche with, you know, content and content marketing. And I actually have a linguistic background. So I have a sort of a natural affinity with content, with words, with copywriting. So that's where I find that I focus now. And I do it as a combination really of consulting, you know, content strategy, help helping teams get started with their content strategies. And then I also, interestingly enough, developed a piece of software that actually helps with content strategy and content planning as well. So that sort of helps with the consulting work that I do, but also helps teams sort of get to grips with content planning themselves as well.
Okay, cool. Well, it's good to have you here. And I'm guessing actually your linguistic background is going to be quite useful for this particular discussion. All about no code. So first of all, what is no code?
Well, it's funny you should ask that because the term itself is a little bit misleading. So where no code is sitting at the moment is mostly in sort of tech companies, founders, that sort of area, right. And they've labeled it no code because they see it as not having any code, at least in terms of the interface that they use to deal with the platforms. There's still code, it's still in the background, but it's just that this new breed of software that's called no code is more visually based. So you don't see the code anymore. And the way that you interact with it is through things like drag and drop interfaces or visual development interfaces, that sort of thing. And it's funny because the reason I actually got into it is I mentioned earlier about this software that I developed. And what I'm trying to do at the moment is actually rebuild the software in no code. So it's taken me down lots and lots of different rabbit holes, which are all really, really interesting. And it's, yeah, sort of opening up this whole world of no code or visual development tools that that are becoming more and more popular. It's one thing I would, well, a better definition I would probably go to is, I think we all know Scott Brinker, the godfather of MarTech, because he's often called. And he describes it as, and I'll quote here, no code gives non-technical marketers the tools and empowerment to build apps, analyze data sets, and route data between different cloud services on their own without having to take a ticket and wait for an expert in IT or even a marketing ops to do the work for them. So that's essentially, you know, it's these sort of interfaces and tools that you can, that marketers can use to build stuff themselves as opposed to have someone else do it.
And I'm guessing it's that empowerment that is the thing about no code that could benefit business marketers, yeah?
Definitely, yeah. It's all the lovely buzzwords like empowerment, agility, you know, getting things to market faster. It's all those sorts of things. Okay. And it's, what I would compare it to is, it's sort of an evolution of marketing automation. I think a lot of us remember when automation came in and what that meant, and maybe some of the promises that were made about automation that did and didn't come through. But I think with no code, it really is that next step on. And all I'd say is for anybody thinking about trying it or, you know, getting started with it, it really is very, very simple. It's a lot simpler than automation. It's a lot simpler than most tools that we're used to working with. So yeah, just go and try it. And I think you'll be astounded by how simple and how easy this stuff is to use.
But I think, Emma, you also argue that it's not yet fit for purpose for business marketers. So perhaps tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I think it's not the tools themselves that are not yet fit. It's more the training or the materials available. So as I mentioned before, the world that this is sort of operating in at the moment is more startups, like non-techie founders that are building their own apps, or especially apps. It's very sort of mobile driven. And when you try and find information around like training materials or guides on how to do things, it's all geared towards these sort of non-techie founders.
Right.
So it's not so much the tools, it's more, as I say, the training, the knowledge that's there. And I also think there's a layer, again, sort of comparing it to marketing automation when that came in, there's a layer of knowledge that marketers need to, it's like that just enough, you know, that they need to know. They don't need to know everything about it, but they need to know just enough to, you know, take agencies, for example, if they're advising a client on a solution, if they know just enough about no code, then they can obviously do that knowledgeably, but they don't have to know everything about it. So there's that layer of knowledge, sort of, yeah, knowing enough about it that is that's missing as well at the moment.
And I guess, does that mean that the business marketing profession should be discouraged from engaging in no code, and just as you say, to keep that, just keep a kind of higher level eye on it for now?
Yeah, I think at the moment it's probably early days for it. And yeah, I would, as a marketer, just, yeah, keep an eye on it. I think that's a really good way to approach it. And if there are certain things that sort of catch your eye and you think, actually, that could help me with a problem that I have at the moment, then don't be afraid to jump in and try it. A lot of these tools have, you know, free trials or actually a lot of free features. So you can get going in them quite easily and just sort of go in, you know, you're never going to break anything or, you know, do anything that dangerous or that bad. So just go and try them. Because that's essentially how I've sort of come across it and just, you know, got going with them that way. Just get stuck in and try them.
To try and get stuck in, as you say, probably we need to direct people to something. So who and what can help if you're wanting to kind of to get started on keeping that eye on where no code is going?
Definitely. So Scott Brinker has produced a mini graphic so far. He's obviously famous for his big super graphics, but he's produced a mini graphic on no code. And that's actually right. A really good place to start, because he divides the tools into one of three different areas. And it's a really good way to understand what the different tools are. Then just from my own personal experience, a really good one to start with is Notion. A lot of people may have already come across that one. It's developing quite rapidly at the moment, lots of new features, new stuff that you can do in it. And that's, a really good place to sort of start. And then the final one, well, actually there's two more. If you did want to go into a bit more detail on it, there's a company called MakerPad that does lots and lots of tutorials, lots of sort of training materials. Again, a bit more for founders. You have to sort of skew them, watch them or read the stuff with a marketing eye.
That's brilliant. Technology marketing consultant Emma Wesley, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Business marketers have in recent years relied on account-based marketing as a key pillar of their work. But in the light of the COVID crisis, has the part that ABM can play diminished? I'm joined now by Kate Bodie, who is the account director at Agent 3. Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And so before we dive into the world of ABM, tell us a bit about what Agent 3 is or does.
Sure thing. So Agent 3 is a global ABM agency, and we work with clients to grow and scale their ABM programs. The way that we approach ABM is firstly looking, everything that we do starts with insight. So we use insight to gain a real understanding of both the target account and the specific audience at a kind of individual level. We then take that insight and develop strategic positioning and messaging that we know is highly likely to resonate with that particular audience. We then, bring that to life through creative content development. And we really focus in on technology to intelligently target and engage with a particular audience. So all of this combined is what we consider to be sort of true ABM. And that's what we sort of aim to deliver for our clients.
Great. So you're absolutely the person to speak to about this then. So I kind of started this this piece out by kind of talking about the role of ABM changing as a result of COVID. So has it?
I think that's a really good question. I think the answer comes in two parts. I think firstly, looking at the fundamental concept of what ABM is, working with sales and marketing teams to effectively drive and engage with their target audience, in the right place, the right time, with the right message. And that is something that we've been doing for a very long time. And I don't think that's really changed that much over the past year. But what I think has changed is if you take in the overall context of COVID-19, when we're working with sales teams, these individuals are sort of inherently social and they thrive in, face-to-face environments and conferences, business lunches and trade shows, and I think these are the places where they close their multi-million pound deals, and that's completely fallen by the wayside this year. And actually, what I've loved most about working in ABM this year is working collaboratively with sales and marketing teams to develop campaigns that engage them, to drive that overall engagement with their key customers. And also being forced to kind of think outside the box and coming up with new ideas to drive, executive engagement.
So if the role of ABM has changed, then the question is begging, how should business marketers be doing ABM today?
I don't think there's a set way of doing ABM. I think, there's no one size fits all approach. But I think, the clients that we have seen had the most success in ABM this year is when, sales and marketing teams have really taken on board the data and what the data is telling them. You know, when we look at executive engagement, the key is to kind of make sure that your sales and marketing teams are all aligned on what the messaging is and who they need to go after. And being really consistent and thorough in their approach. You know, ABM isn't a quick win. And if you're consistent in your approach, then, you know, it's going to break through that mold, especially kind of in this virtual world that we're sort of living in.
Can you give us then some examples of businesses who are doing that well?
You know, we have a ton of things that have both worked and definitely not worked over the past year. But I guess when looking at the businesses that are doing well, I think this comes back, you know, right back down to ABM basics. And they are the ones that have that kind of true sales and marketing alignment. But actually going, you know, one step further. And those people that are really, really up for anything and open to new ideas. You know, the typical white paper or report just kind of isn't really enough anymore. Online is flooded with people just trying to sell stuff to people. And to really stand out, you kind of need to branch out to new mediums. You know, for example, podcasts. Podcasts are a great way to engage with your target audience in a, you know, a fun and different way. But, you know, they're a great tool to get your message across in a slightly more authentic way than kind of traditional piece of content will, like a report or a white paper, for example. And, you know, in the age of COVID-19, thinking outside the box and coming up with ideas that are perhaps a little bit outside of your comfort zone, you know, that's where we've seen where businesses have had kind of the most success in ABM this year.
Okay, so if COVID has kind of changed a little bit the way that we do ABM, has it also changed the benefits of an ABM approach?
I think fundamentally, no. I think, you know, the benefits around, you know, driving ROI and being a bit more strategic and focused in your approach to sales and marketing has only really been enhanced over the past year. And I think we're living in a world where, you know, marketing budgets are, you know, being highly scrutinized, and ABM is much more streamlined and an effective approach to driving ongoing sales and marketing pipeline. And actually, interestingly, we're now seeing a shift in ABM being sort of considered as an organizational imperative from the very top level of an organization. So from that sort of C-suite level. So it's becoming much more than a buzzword or sort of a novel concept as it kind of started out to be, but turning into a real business strategy. And, you know, it's really great to see and to be a part of.
So if you're not on this ABM bandwagon already, and you've talked there about all of the benefits associated with it, if you're not though on that bandwagon, is it too late to get started?
Absolutely not. I think, you know, ABM isn't a race, and we work with clients who are, you know, very mature in their ABM programs, but we also work with large, you know, global enterprise businesses who are very much at the infancy of their ABM. Who are currently looking at, you know, ABM implementation and structuring themselves for an ABM model. So it's definitely not too late. And as I mentioned before, ABM is, you know, it's not a buzzword anymore, and it's becoming a more widely adopted business and go-to-market strategy.
Kate Bodie, Account Director at Agent 3, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Next up, Will Wright shares a key lesson that he's taken on his career journey to being founder of AdaptMe. Will, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, nice to be here.
It's good to have you here. And so before we get started on you, tell us a bit about AdaptMe.
So AdaptMe is a next generation management, innovation and growth consulting company. That's quite a lot really taken in one go, but we focus on systematic delivery of commercial and customer value, work with some of the world's biggest corporate organizations, progressive SMEs, PE companies, VC companies. I think we focus in on strategy, marketing, sales, and the kind of supporting operations around that. So that's why this kind of thing is particularly relevant to what we do.
And what got you to a place where you were founding an organization like that?
Well, career path wise, I didn't really plan this. I started off in accountancy, became a systems engineer, then a strategist, and then a marketer. And throughout that journey, I developed a kind of determination to implement more disciplined strategic thinking, you know, structure, systems, accountability. And when I looked at marketing, I think back then, which was probably 20 years ago, I didn't see as much systems and structure and accountability as I expected. So I've been on a kind of a 20-year journey now to fix that. And so, I mean, that's kind of, that's the sort of career path story. I think today it's still the same, but it's more of a passion now to see those kinds of disciplines introduced into companies and really work.
And would you say you could only really have kind of formed that view of marketing as perhaps not being as deeply analytical as it should be, because you kind of came into marketing through those other disciplines first?
I think there's a popular misconception, and there probably was then too, that, you know, marketing was about colored pencils on the fifth floor and crayons and things and all that stuff. And the creative aspects, the creative side of marketing is astonishingly good. I mean, I've been lucky enough to meet some really skilled people, you know, linguists and people who can tell stories like no one else. But I think the technical background that I came from, accountancy and systems, things, it introduces you to a kind of rigor where you are almost obsessed with process excellence. You become driven by it. And when I looked at marketing, it didn't have as much as I expected. And so, you know, you compare it to something like accountancy or law or systems engineering. And in those days, there just wasn't the discipline. I have to say that, you know, now there is discipline, there is data, there is information. So the situation is quite different today, but now our challenge is to use it properly.
And if we're looking at trying to meet that challenge of using data properly within the discipline of marketing, what sort of things can marketers do to acquire the skills they need to be successful here?
I think the biggest learning I have, and it's not really just, doesn't just apply to marketing, but it does apply to marketing, is to try and become a bit of a T-shaped person. You know, by that I mean a couple of really good, strong disciplines where you have real expertise and then a good appreciation of all the sort of talent that's around you. So, you know, I had finance and systems and then learnt marketing. Whereas, you know, I think other people who maybe come through another path can do exactly the same. I think that makes you a good marketer. I mean, in the end, your job is to orchestrate things. It's to, you know, to take people on a journey that's really a bit, you know, fuzzy sometimes. And your skill in doing that is critical. It's important to the organization. If you have more than one skill, it's easier to do that.
And if you're coming at it from the other side of, you know, having built your expertise in marketing, how should people think about trying to broaden their expertise into other functions? Are there specific functions you would recommend that they build a greater knowledge of? And how might they go about that?
It kind of depends what kind of marketer you want to be. I think a lot of the sort of necessary or interesting disciplines that help marketing along the way are either adjunct type skills, data sciences, behavioral economics, things like that. Or, you know, if you want to come from a more creative side, you know, there are many other creative disciplines that you could look at and bring into the fold. I think, though, increasingly, because sort of the demand is there for it, you know, people are generally, companies are asking for, you know, accountability, proof points, evidence for any plan, whether it's marketing or not. And so I would probably err toward the data sciences. behavioral sciences, probably management sciences as well, just simply because they really do help you separate the wheat from the chaff. You can see things and you can spot evidence, and that kind of training, if you are already skilled in creative marketing, is a huge advantage. If you have that additional insight into data, is very powerful.
I'd still like to kind of pick on kind of what you're advocating in terms of building that expertise. So kind of on the greatest extreme, you could be advocating for every marketer to take a couple of years out of marketing and go and spend some time in a data function. Alternatively, at a kind of lesser extent, you could be saying, oh, well, there's this really good book on data sciences, Dave, that you should read. I don't know where in this scale you're pointing our listeners at.
You know, not everybody has a proclivity toward like data sciences. Let's just put that straight on the table. And I'm not suggesting you have to go and do data sciences. If we just use that as an example, I see nothing wrong with, if you get the opportunity to going into a data sciences environment, that's where you're going to really learn it. You can read the book, and you know, that's great. And yeah, definitely read the books. But I think you have to get not so much hands-on experience, but you need to go and live the life of these people. And they, you know, there's no substitute for that. I mean, it's the same when I came to marketing. I didn't really know marketing. I didn't really get it. I'd read some books in school about, you know, this is what marketing does. But I didn't really get it until I went and joined marketeers. And so it was the same the other way around. I think once you know, take a step, take the opportunity, go learn something new, and then you can come back to the original discipline and you'll be all the better for it. So.
And you can keep listening to the Business Marketing Club podcast along the way as well, so you don't lose touch with marketers on your sabbatical. Will Wright, founder of Adapt2Me, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's some great B2B marketing out there, and I'm joined now by the head of strategy and content at Lesniak Swan, Matt Hicks, to celebrate some of it. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. So first of all, tell us a bit about Lesniak Swan.
Yeah, we're a specialist B2B agency. We've been going about 20 years now, thereabouts. And we offer a full service, so right from strategy, brand positioning, across the whole gamut into digital, campaign creation, PR, you name it, really. We've, down the 20 years, we've specialised in it. So.
That must mean you've seen some really good B2B marketing, I'm guessing. So what's caught your eye?
I think what I wanted to talk about really was more the type that impressed me. I think the main thing really that comes across in great B2B work is around where there's that really strong, clear trust between the agency and the client that's doing it. I think that really, really translates when that's in place and working right. It really does mean better results with the campaign. So, and that, I mean that in terms of the calculated risks you're able to take then, really, and the rewards you get from those. Mm. I think certainly in my experience, if that relationship's not there, then you don't stand to get the same impact, the same rewards at the end of the campaign. So I think you could pick any number of great examples from the last few years, and I think they would all have those parallels, really, in terms of that underlying reason why they've excelled.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So what would you say are the kind of constituent parts of a good agency client working relationship?
I think at the basis, the ability and the willingness to have a very honest conversation about the brief and the reasons behind it. And so from a fundamental point of view on both sides, that requires people who are happy to challenge and happy to really get under the skin of it. Now, in B2B especially, that can mean geeking out at times and making sure you're properly understanding what your client needs and you're talking their language, and then being able to actually hold that argument with them and to have, well, sometimes it's an argument, I suppose, sometimes it's a polite conversation. The arguments tend to be more productive in my experience. And be able to actually have that conversation with them and to come out of it with a common understanding and a common objective, essentially. I think having that interrogation at the start is so important when that work comes back in and goes to studio agency side, making sure that there's that understanding translating through really speaks volumes in the work that comes out from that.
That's interesting. So does that mean as an agency, you look for a particular type of client to build that relationship with? Is there a kind of specific set of characteristics in a client that which kind of means that you kind of intuitively know that this is a client I can do business with?
I wouldn't say we necessarily go out and sort of headhunt those kind of clients, but there's certainly certain clients that clicks with, if you like, on that level. And that's often where the most productive relationships and the best work comes from, where you've got that acceptance on both sides. It's a commitment at the end of the day, I suppose, on both sides, that there's that willingness to go into the details of it and have that back and forth up front really helps to define where a campaign's going.
So and then I guess from a client side perspective, it means that to be able to want to invest in that kind of degree of relationship, you need to know that you've got an agency there that is prepared to actually really get under the skin of understanding your industry and your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I was client side for 12 years before coming agency side this year, and I think that's the least that a client should expect, really, if they're investing that time into something, to have an agency that is going to make the most of that, essentially. I think it's absolutely crucial. It's a big part of how we see the value of what we do to clients is our ability to do that.
We've been talking this year at the Business Marketing Club about a client agent charter. As kind of a basis for that sort of relationship. Is that the sort of thing that you would support at Lesniak Swan?
Yeah, I think there's great value to both sides in that, really. If we can reflect the way that how both sides can best invest their time to get the best results, something like a charter, I think, it would be a great way to go on that, really.
And finally then, so I get the point about good relationships. Can we look at the other side, and can you perhaps go into a bit more detail about the sort of results that you might get from that good agency client relationship?
I think fundamentally it's about aligning with the goals of the client, the business goals of the client. So to a degree, we need to measure what you'd perhaps describe as marketing metrics, so the fluffier side around engagement and click through and that kind of thing. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's about leads and sales. And certainly the work we've done that we're extremely proud of and has won the odd award here and there, without trying to humble brag, has been the ones that have generated that baseline value for clients, really. So it's about, and by understanding the fundamentals, that's really what I'm driving at, is what objectives is this activity going to achieve against those commercial requirements, and then how do we best do that by using the marketing tools and strategy and thinking at our disposal.
In that case, let me close the interview by saying thank you to the head of strategy and content at the award-winning Lesniak Swan,
oh, yes,
Matt Hicks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Cheers.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Emma Wesley, Kate Bodie, Will Wright and Matthew Hicks. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bence. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate us or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.